Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire, your number one MLS podcast on MLSsoccer.com. I am David Goss. Joined up top today, my strike partner, Charlie Davies. We're going to put a couple in the back of the net. XGB damned. We don't even care, Charlie. We're shooting from everywhere.
Everywhere. It's automatic and goals galore. Let's go.
So we got a big show coming up for you. Great interview with Eric Williamson from the Portland Timbers. He's one of our favorites. We've said that over the last year, rising to the occasion in San Jose last weekend. And he's got a big one coming up. National TV on ABC, 3:30 Eastern time on Saturday against the high-flying LA Galaxy. He's still trying to establish himself. He's still trying to say, I need to be in this national team pool. There's a huge chance for him to do it. So we talked to him, some really great conversation, really fun to talk with him and pick his brain a little bit. NYCFC have landed a new designated player. We thought the signings were slowing down. Not the case. This is a historic signing. Brazilian Youth International, big money coming up to NYCFC. So we're going to hit all of that. And then we've got a little bit of our own rumor mill that we're going to start up around Austin FC because they do need a center forward, Charlie. And there's some big names that are available already in this region. So why not? You know, we got to bring it for you. If no one else will do it, we're going to do the heavy lifting for them. Don't forget on MLSsoccer.com, Tom Bogert's got what you can expect from the MLS primary transfer window. Doyle's midweek column has even more Eric Williamson love, which is exactly what I want to hear. This is just an Eric Williamson week now. MLSsoccer.com is officially his website. We're going to change the URL and just move on from there. And then Greg Seltzer's got early surprise standout players of the season. Let's start with our producer, Anders. Reminder of the day. Shout out to Weston McKennie becoming the first American to win the Coppa Italia. As someone said in the MLS subreddit, Americans just love playoffs, baby. This was awesome. He got an assist as well. Kulusevski's goal, in fairness, a lot of that was on the finish. But still there, still making plays. Charlie, what blows my mind about this was a bad year for Juve, but yet Weston McKennie set American records, winning trophies, playing in big games, scoring in Champions League, and you'd assume for Juve it's going to get better, and he's already established himself as a big part of that group.
Well, I think there were a lot of doubts initially
coming
into the team. Was Weston McKennie going to play? Look at how stacked this midfield is. He can't possibly get the playing time at a club like Juve. And he's worked and he's shown the quality, his ability to not only play at a Juve, but star at a Juve. And most people talk, I actually had a conversation with a diehard Juve fan yesterday in Boston. And he said, everybody, all Juve fans love Weston McKennie, what he brings to the table. And they always say, he's got Juve in the blood. He's got Juve in the blood. So I love that he's kind of taken the necessary steps to continue his development, and he's not done yet. He has that positive vibe around him. Everyone likes to be around him, and he's on the pitch. He's working hard. He does all the dirty work, which allows players like Cristiano Ronaldo to thrive.
And it's just going to get better. He's a gamer. He's the guy you want on your team, as you said. It's going to be pretty special. Don't forget Jonathan David, Canadian international, playing for a Ligue 1 title on Sunday. Angers, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time for him. Lille controls their own destiny. Win, it's their title. They break PSG's run. Lose, you probably leave the door too far open for Kylian Mbappe. But we believe in Jonathan David. He's had an unbelievable year. He's grown and he's come on big. He's got big World Cup qualifying coming up for Canada. So we believe he's going to get it done, right, Charlie? How do I say in French, good luck?
I think Timothy Weah is going to come on and bang one home.
Stop. Wow. I try and give some Canadian love on this show, and you pull the red, white, and blue back out. All right, man. This is why I need a Canadian host sometimes, just to toss to. I'm trying to carry the load by myself. Let's jump into some MLS news, some MLS action. NYCFC, as I said, Talles Mangno, coming from Vasco da Gama, a young designated player signing, huge signing for this club and also for MLS. Another one of these signings out of Brazil that we used to never see and has become fairly common in this offseason. We've seen Brenner. We've seen Gregory. We've seen Alexandre. Wow, I don't know where my pronunciations are right now. I'm taking on Wiebe and Doyle, both of them, and combining without them on the show. A little background on him. At 16 years old, he debuted for Vasco da Gama, which is their youngest debutant in the 21st century. 61 appearances between Serie A and Serie B because Vasco's really struggling right now. They're in the second division. 5 goals in those appearances. Started 4 games in 2019 for the Brazil U-17 World Cup team that won the World Cup in Brazil. This is a signing, Charlie, we didn't see in MLS a few years ago. We started to see them now out of Argentina. Atlanta United led a lot of that. But now Brazil, which is the strongest league in the Americas, this is like a whole new ballgame.
A whole new ballgame. And this could be the start of signing those young Brazilians, which most European teams do, mm-hmm. big clubs, developing them here, and then either A, selling them for massive amounts of money, or B, keeping them here and just keeping that flair and entertainment, which yeah. brings a lot of those spectators to the stand. So I love the move. It's going to be interesting to see how Ronnie Dyla puts him into his team. Is he just going to put him right in and put him alongside Castellanos and Tajiri Shradi? Or is it you keep Jesus Medina, who's been playing well under Dyla? Or do you completely change the formation? So I'm interested to see how they bring him along. Is it throw him right into the fire and play 90 minutes from the jump, or slowly kind of integrate him into the team?
One of the things you have to say for Brazil is they have called up players who don't play in the traditional clubs and the traditional 5 leagues in Europe over the last few years. We've seen Paulinho go to China. We've seen Everton Ribeiro play in the Middle East and get opportunities. So there actually might be an opening here, as you said, for these Brazilians to maybe stay here longer than it seems like for Argentines, who have to almost go to Europe to get consistent call-ups in the Argentine national team. This might be a possibility, as you said, for NYCFC. He's a left-sided attacker. He can also play as a center forward. It's exactly what they needed. As you said, they've been playing a 3-5-2. We're hearing that Maxi Morales will be back. If not this week, then 100% the following week, which you think would tweak a little bit of that midfield for them already. We talked about them on Monday. Kalen and Doyle said they were contenders already. This just only pushes them even higher on the list in that MLS Cup conversation.
100%, because we always knew they had a very structured, talented squad. You lose Alexander Ring, I had some doubts, but I think what Keaton Parks and Acevedo have done in the midfield have kind of shown that they do have what it takes to pick up where Alexander Ring left off when he was at his defensive midfield position, when I think New York City FC were at their best. And James Sands, I think his best position is that central back in the 3-5-2. I think that probably plays to his strengths a little bit more than playing as a 6 or an 8. So I think as things stand, this might be the best chance for New York City FC to really make a difference and a splash in the Eastern Conference.
Now, in saying that, I think Anton Tinnerholm's been out a bit to start this season. You bring him back, you don't need the wingbacks. No, I was completely wrong about that. I don't know why I said that. But you bring him back, you don't need as much of wing back play, right? So my question is, if it's best for James Sands, but is the team better in a 4-3-3? Is the team better with more pieces up around a Maxi Morales to create for him and not having that many numbers sitting deep?
Well, you still have a wing back in Tinnerholm, and right. Tararensen is a wing back too. So you're playing to benefit those two players and the back three, because Sands complements Kayens and Chanot really well. So you have the youth between two super experienced center backs who have played well together for 5+ years in MLS. So I think with this formation, you're going to get the most out of your backs, but also in the attack, because Tinnerholm and Tararensen are going to get up there to support a player like Maxi Morales, who's going to find them in those gaps, in those spaces. So I think this is the best formation for this team.
It sounds like Alfredo Morales about to come back from injury as well, was very good at the start of this season. Magno, to mention, so before COVID, it sounded like Liverpool and Arsenal were the two teams that were competing for his signing. And then that went away as the ability to travel and transfers went away. Now he comes into MLS. That's the type of prospect we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And when you watch his highlights and you hear the way players talk, people talk about him. It sounds a lot like Tati Castellanos when he came, with the ability to play out wide and create, but then also be that center forward. And Castellanos has grown as a center forward. Now he can control the game, drop deep, create chances, and finish up top. So a ton of flexibility, which was when NYCFC's been at their best, when they've had Tajiri Shradi flowing and Mitrica, where, yeah, they could play on the left or the right or underneath or as false nines, and they kind of are starting to get that back again with these numbers in the attack.
100%. And what I thought was, when Patrick Vieira was manager, they had this identity and the flow, and I thought, wow, this team really knows how to play within itself, right? To dictate the tempo, but to high press, also to drop back and counter. They literally played the game so well. It took some time, but I think Ronnie Dyland now understands his squad and the best way to get the most out of the squad in certain formations and instances of inserting players in the right spot. So I think this team finally is showing like signs that it's ready to compete.
NYCFC fans will love hearing that. They've got Columbus this weekend, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Charlie's is a Columbus team that are the lowest scoring team, the lowest chance creating team in the league. This is a must for them to start to get back in winning ways.
I was shocked, to be honest. I called the game for the radio for the Revs, and I was shocked at how the Crew played.
Yeah,
Jossie Zardes barely touched the ball. When he did, he lost it every single time. Pedro Santos coming in for Lucas Ellerán in the midfield again looked lost at times. There wasn't any type of clear play or ideas in the attacking third. Luis Diaz was defending most of the game. Same with Etienne. Nagby and Artur, as great as they are, they were kind of just keeping possession in their own half or the middle third. Never dangerous in the attacking third. So they really need to drastically improve. And it probably starts with getting Lucas Ellerán on the field and healthy, but also just the ideas of Harrison Afful and Waylon Francis struggled too, playing against Teal Bunbury and Brandon Bye. So they have a long way to go to see what we saw from them last year.
And we didn't think this was going to be the case. We thought this was a team that was deep enough to cover those injuries.
Yes.
Clearly, we were wrong about that. And you could hear the frustration right now for Caleb Porter as well with this group. So as I said, huge matchup Saturday evening for that one. Let's talk a couple other big signings before we get into the weekend slate of games. Two national TV games on Saturday and Sunday. So plenty of MLS action coming your way. It's going to be a lot of fun. But Franco Fragapane, who we talked about a lot on this show, is finally official. 28-year-old from Argentina, left winger, can play as a center forward as well out of Talleres in Argentina. 3 goals already this season, but the 28-year-old will be a TAM signing. And this is the Molino replacement. This was the big target besides a center forward. This offseason, they signed 2 center forwards, Ramon Avila on loan, and then it sounds like Adrian Hunu is finally in Minnesota now, so he's able to start training with the team in the coming few days. We probably start to see him in games in a week or two, which is really exciting for them. But Charlie, this is a piece that they've been dying for over the course of this season.
Well, they needed a player who could create for others and take people on 1v1. Ethan Finley is probably the most predictable player of all time in MLS, right? And there is something to be said because he's had some success.
A ton of success
in this league being so predictable. But there always comes a point where you need to be a little bit more dynamic and give me something different. And so that's what they're getting with this player. And Hassani Dotson, I think you got to figure out a better place for him. He's not just a left midfielder. He's going to tuck inside, which allows Chase Gasper to get down the left. But then there's holes, right? So I think this move allows Ruben Lode to get back to the right. And he's a player who loves to come inside. He's an inverted outside midfielder who come inside on his left foot, stronger left foot, and score goals. That's when he's at his best. I think there's much more comfort when he can come inside and overload the midfield, which gives Reynoso tons of space and more players to connect with. He is also a special, special player. So this team, we knew they have talent.
Yeah.
They have so much talent. And I think Abila was more of a band-aid than the solution at striker for Minnesota. They brought him in because they're like, we need somebody to play up there. We can't play with the false nine with Robin Lode up there this whole time. So they brought in Abila. I think he's a band-aid. Who knew is the player who should be the one to take them to the next level. So that'll be exciting to see him on the pitch.
Yeah, all of it coming together. DeBassi's still out, but you hope these attacking pieces take some of the pressure off the attack for this Minnesota team. And as you said, it's like a combination. They're adding a new piece, but you're also making everyone more comfortable. Reynoso will have more pieces to play off. Dotson gets into his comfortable position. Robin Lode, I don't think, has ever scored when starting on the left. He's been okay at center forward. He's been phenomenal coming off the right wing. That's why he's starting for Finland in the Euros, most likely coming up. So all of these pieces seem to make sense. Congratulations to Minnesota United fans that they finally got it over the line. And it seems like are ready to start rolling through for the rest of the season, coming off two big wins. They do have a bye this weekend. So you got your Wonderwalls in twice in 1 week, and now you wait a little bit. Let's talk one last story. The Athletic putting out a great piece around MLS and a bunch of different transfer rumors and stories over the course of this Thursday. And one of them is that Justin Che, who's an FC Dallas homegrown signing, currently on loan training with Bayern Munich. The rumor that they put out in the report, because Paul Tenorio was on the headline as well, not just Sam, is that Bayern Munich's interested in making it a permanent signing with Che, who's only 16 years old. It's awesome to see for him. It will be the second player sold by FC Dallas to Bayern. Of course, Chris Richards already going. It sounds like the number is going to be even higher than Richards. Richards was $1.5 million with a sell-on fee. So we're talking $2, $3 million for FC Dallas with Justin Che going to Bayern. Charlie, everyone keeps asking, is it a golden generation? I keep saying no, because the conveyor the conveyor belt's been turned on.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive. It really gets me hyped because you're thinking all of these players in Europe and they're playing. Most of them are playing.
Yeah.
And because of Chris Richards' success, that opened the door for a player like Justin Che, because they said, you know what? He left a great impression at Bayern Munich. So now we're going to be coming to the United States to look for center backs or players in general because of what Chris Richards did for these kids. I mean, it's incredible. I'm really excited about the future because we are producing players. That's a fact.
So great for FC Dallas. USMNT still has work to do because I believe he does have a German passport. Hasn't been cap tied in any way. So something to keep your eye out for. Obviously also makes it easier for him to get over there. But I think we got to give a shout to FC Dallas because one, they've created this connection with Bayern. I think it was five players that went over and traded with Bayern this offseason. And then they asked Justin Che to stay. So they've created this ability for players to show themselves. And the other is I've seen Justin Che play since he was 15. He was a center forward. And FC Dallas saw his skill set and made the conscious conversation with him to say, we think you're a pro at the center back position. They converted him to center back. They've worked on it for years now. They've given him opportunities to play up at the youth level, then play in USL as only a 15-year-old on an academy loan. And then they signed him to a homegrown deal. They have progressed him perfectly the way they want to. And it seems like now they're going to get some reward at the end, although Dallas fans would love to see him play in the stadium. But either way, he's going to represent Dallas well in Europe if that's what it is. And I know we've said it on this show before, but we got to show the examples when it happens. This is what Dallas has done so well. Lucci Gonzalez was a huge part of this. Everyone in the Dallas Academy, as well as their front office, had this vision, had this idea. Ricardo Pepi's next. Paxton's back and healthy. Tanner Tessman's getting starts. Eddie Manjoma's in the starting lineup. Get jacked up, man. Homegrown's doing their thing for Dallas. They'll face off against RSL Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. RSL also getting some great performances from their homegrowns, one of the best academies in MLS as well. So a lot of great action Saturday night. But Saturday early, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, the Portland Timbers take on the LA Galaxy on national TV, on ABC and ESPN Deportes. And we sat down with Eric Williamson a few days ago to talk about it. All right, welcome for our AT&T call to the field. And who else would we do it with? But the biggest name in MLS right now, Eric Williamson, doing his thing for the Portland Timbers. Eric, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Anytime, anytime.
So we had to have you on. Huge national TV game coming up, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday against the LA Galaxy on ABC. How excited are you for this matchup?
You know, I think it's just the biggest one of the year. You know, you look at Seattle and, you know, it's obviously a rivalry game, but LA Galaxy is one of the hottest teams in the league right now. And I think, you know, we need to continue to focus on what we did last game. I think me being able to step up, you know, relieve some stress within the team. And I think, you know, it's just something I need to go out and do again. You know, guys are pumped up to play this game. And I know I'm buzzing just to, you know, get out there and play at home. Hopefully we get 50% fans, but you know, it's gonna be an exciting one.
They're second in the West. I assume that's where you want to be. Is this a statement game for you guys?
100%. I think, you know, we had a slow start to this year, but we can go out there and I believe we can, you know, compete with these teams. You know, as I said before, they're flying, you know, Seattle, Galaxy, you know, two teams top of the West. You know, that's where we ultimately want to be.
So when you guys have the conversation around your team with the talent you have, is it trophy or bust this year?
100%. I think it's, we have so many pieces that are connecting, you know, we have what it takes to win a championship. And I think, you know, if we fall anywhere short, you know, we're going to be disappointed.
Let's take a look back at San Jose. You mentioned stepping up. You played in that D-mid role. You were Diego Chara plus some for the day. What did it feel like going into that game, knowing that that was your responsibility and what the team was asking of you?
You know, it's a position that I don't play too often. And it was, you know, a new role for me, a new situation. I think I stepped up. I think it's now it's, you know, that needs to be the standard. You see what Diego Chara does week in and week out. And without him, it's obviously a big miss. But if I can step up and do what he does and do what I did last game, I think we'll be in a good place.
What have you taken from him watching him that allowed you to play that way?
You know, his leadership, his confidence, you know, all the things that he brings, you know, making sure he's slowing the game down, making sure he's controlling the tempo. I think, you know, we didn't have much of the ball, but I think we were in good spots. We made it really difficult for San Jose to get anything going. I think it's, you know, I think it's our first clean sheet of the year. So it's a good stepping stone that, you know, we were able to do it without one of our veterans, one of our leaders in the middle. And, you know, being able to step up and have that role was a big one. But I think, you know, I was able to step up to the occasion.
We kind of saw for you last year, it was sort of that out of nowhere and then big performance moment. It was that for Logan Ketterer on Saturday. What was it like to watch him come out of nowhere and then make a save against the all-time goal scorer?
I mean, we look at him and it's like, hey, Logan, we don't know much about you, but you stood in your head and, you know, we all just wanted to kind of, you know, hug him, you know, say, hey, man, you just really massive save. You can see in the replay, he was just kind of like, guys, we still got a game to finish, you know, focus, lock in. And, you know, he stepped up the occasion as well. I think he's one who absolutely did his thing.
When you look at the way you performed in that game, was the added pressure, is the added responsibility something that makes you play better?
For sure. You know, I've mentioned before that there's a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. So I know that every game I have to continue to push, continue to make the statement that, you know, where, you know, taking that step in my career and put myself in the best position to, you know, be where I want to be, which is being a part of the national team.
Chip on your shoulder. Have you taken anything personally lately?
A little bit. You know, watching The Last Dance, you know, it was one of those on the flight that you just kind of get excited. It's one of those motivation pieces. And I finished that episode, I think, 20 minutes before we landed. And it's like, wait, I think this is a great moment for it. And it, you know, it was a statement game. It was I took it a little personal knowing that I didn't make it there. I wasn't able to help the team, but you know, ultimately, I think it's just one that I need to continue to prove myself. And, you know, these last couple of games have been a good example of it. But I think, you know, there's still more to come.
So you'd never seen the series before? You didn't watch it when it first came out?
No, I watched it when it came out. It was just one of those rewatch, you know.
Got it.
And so it's one of those download and, you know, watch on the plane. So I have that on the repeat.
So now when we do the Portland Timbers one in like 10, 15 years, this is going to be a part of it now, right? Did you feel that?
No, for sure. I think it's one of those where it's, you know, we look at the great names we have on our team, but, you know, being able to have other guys, you know, Jabos, you know, a lot of key pieces that, you know, can take these kind of things personally. And it's massive that, you know, I was able to step up and help the team. And I'm sure once these guys are back, it's going to take a little bit of, you know, pressure off me. But ultimately, it's just more to continue to produce and continue to push the team forward.
So you've said you've started the year well, off of not being at Olympic qualifying, and that was the frustration for you. What are the moments like after you find out you won't be there and then watching the team not qualify and know you won't be going to the Olympics? How is it that you internalize that to lead to these performances?
Yeah, a lot of it is, you know, I felt for the guys. You know, it was never, okay, I'm not there, I don't want the guys to qualify. And it's like, well, we have so much more to do as a country. We have to continue to push. We have to continue to, you know, make this should have been something where, you know, we're for sure going to the Olympics. And now it's, you know, I'm battling to make this Olympic the actual Olympics instead of the Olympic qualifying group. So, you know, I knew once I got back here, it was okay, well, brush that off. You have a whole season ahead of you. You know, there's big tournaments coming up this summer. Can I put myself in a position to be a part of those groups, whether or not I made Olympics qualifying? So it's a lot of that, a lot of talks with Gio, a lot of talks with, you know, Miles, you know, so all the assistants about, you know, where I want to take my game and, you know, what I need to focus on. And I think we did a great job this preseason. You know, we had a quick turnaround with Champions League, and I think we could have got more out of it, but, you know, we're a little disappointed there. And it's just now all eyes on the league, and guys are buzzing after that win. And it's just want to continue to push forward after.
What was it like, that senior CONCACAF experience, even though it was at the club level in CCL? Those are some of the best teams in the region. You'd done it at a youth level, obviously, and successful there. But what was it like to get that CONCACAF experience and have that challenge?
I mean, those games are just different. You know, you gain so much experience. You know what it takes to battle against, you know, Club America, one of the biggest clubs in this region. And being able to go toe-to-toe with them, you know, 1-1 at home and, you know, a disappointing 3-1, I think, you know, we score a couple goals and it's a different conversation. But ultimately, it's just good knowing that we have what it takes, even though, you know, we weren't fully healthy. You know, we're missing like Blanco, we're missing, you know, some of these names, but we're still able to go toe to toe with them. You know, we're still able to compete, and seeing five MLS teams there is massive for not only the MLS, but I think the development. You look at Philly with all the guys they have, and it's just a lot of younger guys coming up and getting these, you know, CONCACAF experiences. And ultimately, it's maybe a small game in some careers, but ultimately, I think it was one of the biggest games of my career.
You mentioned coming back and talking to Gio and the staff about what you wanted to do. Have you heard from Greg Berhalter or any of his staff this season?
No. I know we talked in January, and it was a bit of a, you know, make sure you're in a good spot this summer. Haven't really heard anything recently. Once leaving qualifying, it was just kind of all eyes on MLS and focusing on what's going on here.
And the other thing going on there is Portland Thorns are back. I heard you are one of the biggest fans. Season tickets?
Season tickets. You know, I have the suite always, you making sure Gavin has us, you know, ready to go and in the suite for the Thorns. But, you know, it's statement game for them winning 5-0 this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, winning the Challenge Cup, we unfortunately had to miss it because we played the next day and they played at noon. So it was one of those that we finished training, everyone's sprinting into the locker room, and they're in PK. So it's, you know, we're all huge fans. We support them. And I mean, the crew and the team that they have is unbelievable. And, you know, being able to watch it firsthand, it's just, I know I'm honestly grateful for it. So
what's it like having two teams kind of in the same umbrella, as like rooting for each other like that? That's kind of like college setup, where it's like you've got both sides and they're all fans of each other.
100%. I mean, you look at after the game, it's like we want to go on the field and congratulate them. And it's like, guys, like, these are professional. And we're like, okay, we have to sit back. And it's like, at the same time, you know, we also want to, you know, fanboy them a little and be like, hey, you know, I've said to Crystal multiple times, like, hey, it's been a pleasure to watch you, and, you know, try to support from afar. But I mean, they know how much we believe in them and how much we love going to their games and supporting them.
I'm going to try and get you to fanboy now. I have already on this show. Jeremy Obovese is going to make his 100th appearance in all competitions if he plays in the game this weekend, which we very much hope he will. What's it been like watching him work and sort of watching him, you know, kind of feels like a year ahead of you, sort of have that breakthrough, learn the pro game experience?
I think it's one to admire. You know, as you said, fanboy a little bit. You know, I've looked at Jabo multiple times and I'm like, wow, this guy's playing day in, day out. I need to do what he's doing. And it's like, oh, why are you doing the same thing in the gym as me now? And it's like, well, you know, I want to get like you. And he just like kind of brushes it off. Like, okay, whatever, you know, you're just trying to make fun of me. But it's, you know, honestly, it's one to look up to. He's done many things in his career. I think we both have had honest conversations with each other where, you know, we're picking each other's brains about, you know, where to be on the field, what we see, what we, you know, don't see. And I think just kind of being so close with growing up, being the youth national teams, you know, we're able to use each other's, you know, stepping stones. If he thinks I need help or, you know, I think he needs help, you know, we pick each other's brains. And a lot of it is very, very helpful. You know, he's told me a lot that I didn't even see in games. It's, hey, look at this pass, try this, try that. And it's, you know, when it comes off, it's like, well, why did you do it for me? It's, I told you this ahead of time. And it's, you know, kind of like Laria's second goal. It's, you know, J-Ball always wants that ball. And it's like, okay, of course you play that ball the moment I come off the field. So just one of those.
J-Ball's just trying to eat, man. You just got to help him out up there.
He is. He really is.
I heard that when something like that happens, there's a celebration tunnel at practice after. Is that true?
Yeah. I got a little beat up today. I was able to wear a jacket and I snuck in behind a few guys, but you know, whenever you were able to make, you know, the team of the week or, you know, anything along those lines, it's a celebratory tunnel, but it's more kind of like a punishment. Like, hey, you know what? You helped us out on the weekend, we get to punish you now. So
that's fun. That's what teams like to do.
I guess so. That's like one of our little fun things to do.
All right. I appreciate it. I wanted to ask you before we let you go, we've talked about this a little bit, but now that you've established yourself, when you look back at what the last 2-3 years have been for you, even longer, do you remember like a breakthrough moment or an aha moment where you realize it's going in the right direction or I am at this level, or that, you know, moment everyone says when you're in the show, when you look around and say, oh my God, I made it?
To an extent, I think, you know, now it's still not that moment for me. I think the moment for me that really was an honest look yourself in the mirror, what's going on, was when I got back from Portugal. It's now a whole year of, you know, not playing meaningful games. You know, I went T2 here and there, and it was, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and it wasn't taking a leadership role. And it's when I got back from Portugal, I think that's when Jeremy Abobasi was just getting through. So he was, hey, listen, you need to, you know, do what you've done in your career, kind of grind it through. And it's 2019 was a little bit of a breakthrough, but going into preseason 2020 was, hey, listen, like this is, it's all or nothing. You know, it's one of my last years here, potentially. And it was, okay, well, I need to make sure I go out and do everything I can. It was going to start right before the pandemic hit. Yeah. In New England, and it's, well, finally, okay, I've broken through early enough to, you know, get some meaningful games, and boom, we were shut down. So I knew coming out of that, it was, I need to hit the ground running. And I think MLS's back was a huge statement for me. I think it was probably the first step that I said, okay, well, that was a massive step forward. I've done something, and now it's, you know, building from there. I think there's no moment now that I'm feeling where it's okay, I made it. It's, you know, there's so many more steps I need to take in my career, you know, where I want to be. So it's a lot of that for me personally. I think it's, I'm hard on myself, but I think that's ultimately what I need to do.
All or Nothing, another docuseries you can check out to get yourself pumped up.
Exactly.
Well, we it's been fun watching you take those steps, man. It's been awesome to watch you do your thing and grow. And I'm on the bandwagon, dark horse MVP, national team, gold cups, all of it. So good luck for the rest of the season and good luck on Saturday.
Thank you. Really appreciate you, my man.
Oh, baby. One of the best interviews in MLS, Eric Williamson. One of the best young players as well. He's so much fun to watch. Charlie, he's just been growing. He's getting more confident. He's getting better. Let's start with what he said about the team. Then we'll get into him a little bit. I asked him and he was pretty straightforward. This is a statement game for them. They are striving right now to be where the Galaxy are. And this is a team that it's trophy or bust this year. As he said it better than I can, there's too much talent in this team to not win something.
There's a plethora of options. But I think what it comes down to is Eric Williamson is that much more important on this team than he once was with Blanco and Valeri. Valeri getting up there in age and Blanco, you know, still recovering from the ACL injury he suffered. So I think what I've loved from Eric Williamson is he was an attacker. So he has the ability to beat you on the dribble. Mm-hmm. A lot of midfielders who play a deep lying role can't beat you on the dribble. It's usually side to side, or they get by you by combining. He can beat you on the dribble. He can combine. He has great passing range and he's a tough tackler. I just think the athleticism that he brings to that midfield for Portland with the youth and pairing him with Diego Chara next to him, it's a really formidable partnership. And I think it allows him to just continue to develop. And now without Diego Chara the past match, I think he took it. I think he took on more responsibility and he shined. So he's one of the players that I watch and I'm like, this guy has a future in Europe. You know, so I would be surprised if a big club or clubs don't come calling for Eric Williamson.
So for the Timbers, we've seen a few debuts for homegrowns this year as my Montreal jersey falls behind me. But they don't have a ton of young pieces coming through. Is there a world in which they do everything they can, even maybe making him a DP to keep him because Valeri and Chara are going to be done sometime soon? Blanco's on the wrong side of 30. He's not going to be there for a while. Like, is there a world in which instead of saying this is a good young player, it's time to go to Europe, that you can actually build your MLS team around a guy like him and maybe Jeremy Obobese?
Of course. I mean, more so Eric Williamson. But I think the league has kind of positioned themselves to say if a good offer comes,
yeah,
you sell. And it's a good story for the club. You took a chance on him. He came back to the league. Didn't have the best of transitions, but comes to Portland and you build him up and then you sell him. And now who wouldn't want to go to Portland knowing that there is a future for me at this club? And I will, if my dream is to go play in Europe, that I'll get to fulfill it through the Portland Timbers club. So I love what they've been able to do. The fans are amazing. It's a place that you would want to stay.
Right.
If you're going to stay in Major League Soccer, that's one of the clubs that you'd love to. Great city. Great fan base. The stadium is just, you know, pandemonium. The crowd comes in. I always remember playing there and being like, man, these fans bring it every time. You can feel the pressure and the intensity. So it's a win-win, to be honest. It's a win-win for Portland having Eric Williamson in the side.
Reminder, so let's bring another fan base in here. The rumor is DC United has a sell-on because he was a DC homegrown, maybe even as high as 50%. So DC fans right now, they're scouring Europe looking for offers because you're going to get paid as well if this thing goes down, whatever it is. We just hope to see him continue to kill it. Reports coming out about Tyler Adams dealing with a back injury. We've got an episode of Club and Country coming up, so we're going to talk about that sixth position, that depth chart. He only played it once. He played it well against San Jose. Let's see if Eric Williamson can keep doing this and go to that Club and Country episode coming up next week, coming out next Wednesday, and you're going to hear more about, you know, our U.S. national team depth charts, especially some of these question mark positions at center back in central midfield now. Something to know for this Portland Timbers versus LA Galaxy game on Saturday, as well as Atlanta United versus Seattle Sounders on Sunday. A little bit of history. MLS is teaming up with Secret Walls and Bitsky to offer street art-inspired NFTs for this weekend's matches with, ooh, Portland and the Galaxy, as well as with Seattle and LA. So this is the first time ever that there'll be an MLS NFT. They will be happening during the game. So during the Galaxy Portland game, the people at Secret Walls will be drawing and creating and spray painting the poster that's just for that match. Unlimited amount to bid on and buy during the game. Once the game ends, they're no longer available. So you got to get in while the game's being played. That, of course, for Portland, LA on Saturday, and then the same for Atlanta, Seattle on Sunday. You can go to MLSsoccer.com for more information. Charlie, all I know is when something historic happens, you want to get in and get in early. I've got like the t-shirt that says MLS Miami from their launch, but it doesn't even have a team name on it. And that's like classic to me. So I think if you're gonna be about this, you got to get in this weekend and take advantage.
Yeah, I mean, if there's an NFT that involves your club, you got to jump on it, because I love the fact that we're starting to see this NFT craze, and what does that mean, and how much are they worth, and what are the value? These are just awesome pieces that you won't be able to get again. So I'm all about it. I'm hyped. This is a cool thing they're doing. Jump on it.
Yeah, go to MLSsoccer.com for more information about it. They also talk about offsetting the carbon footprint, which has been a big conversation around NFTs, and MLS is doing a ton of work to try and take care of that. So that's 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday during the Galaxy and Portland game. We have another national TV game on Saturday as well. Chicago Fire are hosting Inter Miami on Unimas Tudien. And of course, you can listen in English on Twitter. This is it, Charlie. This is the big Chicago Fire return to Soldier Field that, unfortunately, because of COVID, we never got. And now we're starting to get fans in the stadium. And now we get the big national TV game. The Higuain brothers, who have been flying, coming in and making this a big event. And I think the Chicago Fire really need this right now. It's been a struggle to start this year, but there's talent in this group. This team is better than what they've shown. And even if they're going to make big mistakes to lose, they can play better soccer than the last 2-3 weeks. And we saw it the first 2 weeks. I think you saw it in person, you know, week one against the Revs. That midfield three, when they're flowing, when the ball is moving, they can play some pretty stuff.
You know, I want to give you props and say you got this one right, but this Chicago team is really
Charlie's not, like, get out of here.
Yeah, they're missing a lot of pieces. They definitely can play better, but they're not great. They're not strong, and it's going to be a tough season unless they start making some strong improvements. Of course, playing at Soldier Field with a bunch of fans gives you that uptick in you know, being a little bit more aggressive and taking some chances. But the ideas from them and their execution has been very poor. So this is a team that needs something, like you said, a win to galvanize them, get them going. Robert Berich needs to start scoring goals, but he needs chances to score goals. He's not a player who's just going to, you know, create a moment out of nothing with magic dribbling six players. Like, he needs service. And so I think this team still needs to figure out, how are we going to attack? And the transition to defend is where they've struggled.
All right. Well, some improvement maybe coming for Chicago. It was a quieter offseason for them because of how much work they did the year before, which makes sense. And Szymon Frankowski, I think, got called up for the Poland Euros team as well. So they'll lose him for some part of the summer. So a lot of question marks around the Chicago group. But a big opportunity here on national TV to maybe stake their claim to start to move up the ladder. And Inter Miami, they've been susceptible at the back. They've given up chances, but Higuain brothers have been there late in games where Chicago normally struggles to hit teams and get big wins. So this is going to be a fascinating matchup. That one at 6 p.m. Eastern time. We'll go over some of our favorite ESPN Plus watches on Saturday night coming up, but let's move to Sunday first. That other NFT game with the Secret Wall, Seattle Sounders hosting Atlanta United, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox and Fox Deportes as well. And Sounder at heart, which if you're a Sounder fan, you already read them. If you're not, I recommend going. It's great coverage about the Seattle Sounders. They put together a piece of statistically just how good the start to the year has been for Seattle. There's talk it's the best start in franchise history. It's tough to put everything together, especially with the way last year looked and the way the league changes and opposition and all of those things. But they're on pace for 91 points right now in the season, which
good
is
Lord.
Ridiculous, probably unsustainable.
Especially from the Sounders.
Yeah.
You know, the slow starts, like, they're notorious for that.
Which is why this has been so mind-blowing. One of the stats that jumped out to me is Raul Ruiz Diaz. He 1.2 goal/assists expected per game, more than anyone else in MLS. But he actually hasn't finished at the highest rate he could have for expected goals. So he could still be better if he had been a little bit cleaner, which is scary for all those teams out there yes. to think about. And then let's think about them as a team, Charlie. Nico Lodero, the report coming out this week that it'll be until June for him to make his full return. We saw him for a few minutes off the bench, clearly not fully fit. And also, why rush him at this point? How much better can this team get bringing him back?
Well, this is arguably the best we've ever seen the Sounders at this stage in the season. And I think to myself, teams typically aren't great to start the year, right? It takes them some time, takes some players a month, two, three, four to get into a rhythm, get that fit and for their fitness up and their form. But this Seattle team is playing at their best with what they have now. And they're missing the most important part of that team, which is Nico Lodero. So to imagine what he's going to bring to this squad. And I love what Kellen Rowe has done coming in. He's kind of been one of those players who has made a real impact. The back three with Arriaga, you know, Yaimar Gomez and Tolu, like they've also looked super strong. They play well together. Brad Smith has a wing back role. Alex Roldan has improved tremendously as a right wing back. Christian Roldan has always been the utility player, covers the whole field, every inch of grass on the pitch. He's been fantastic with his work rate. And I've always loved Rui Diaz, his presence, his runs, intelligence, his finishing. But you throw in Ladero, who can change the pace, the set pieces, the switching of attack, just the ideas that come with a Nico Ladero. This team is just going to be so dynamic and dangerous. Will Bruin is like, you know, he's a great substitute. He's been forced to play and he's done okay. But again, you have opportunities with Freddie Montero to come in. You get him going. We're starting to see Danny Leyva back. That was a player that everyone talked about as a young up-and-coming player. Atencio, can't forget about him. His first two matches, I thought he was stellar. So this team has youth. They have experience. They're scoring goals. You even saw Stefan Cleveland come in goal, and there wasn't a drop-off.
Yeah.
So credit to the staff, credit to the players, that they're pushing for more, and they've set a standard. Seattle Sounders have set the standard. We are the best team in Major League Soccer, and we have ambition to always be the best team, that we're competing for records, for trophies, for points. And that's really encouraging. I love to see it. Their fans deserve it, and it's just incredible for the league.
They're one of the model franchises since they've come into the league. One supporter shield, which is not a negative. It was a great team in 2014, but as you said, they haven't had big starts. They want to compete for trophies. I don't want to say this in a negative way of like it's this or bust or it's bad, but they have to win Supporter Shield this year. Smetzer's never won it as a head coach in his time, and it feels like with this start, that's got to be the expectation for this club.
I think if you're going to improve this side, well, you get Lodero back. Do you play him next to João Paulo? Do you play him as that 10? You move Roldan back to the player next to João Paulo. You can improve in that spot that Will Bruin's in. You can improve, I'd say, another center back. You know, Arriaga has done well, but you could go out and get, maybe it's a young up-and-coming American center back, maybe through their academy system. But this is a team that has a lot of strong pieces. And it's just continuing to foster that young generation, the up-and-coming players, to get them.
That's why you picked them preseason to win Supporters Shield, right?
Yeah, of course.
Put it down, Anders. Make sure you go back and check out those graphics. Let's make sure we get Charlie on the right side of history here. They're playing against Atlanta United. For Atlanta, this is an interesting one. Obviously, they get the emotional win last week. I've said it on this show a lot. They struggled to score goals, but you'd assume Seattle, while they're comfortable sitting a little bit deeper and hitting in transition, it won't be like the teams that have come to Atlanta so far this season. So maybe this is a good opportunity for Atlanta to create some opportunities, not against a super low block and having to pull it apart and, you know, throw numbers forward and all that. Could be an opportunity for them. It would be a statement win as well on national TV to kind of say that they're back under Gabriel Heinze. So that one, 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox and Fox Deportes. And Secret Walls also doing a special match poster during that game that is available on NFTs. Again, go to MLSsoccer.com for all that information. And then Sunday closes up with another national TV game to finish off the weekend. Nashville SC versus Austin FC, Fox Sports 1 and Fox Deportes. Alex Ring returning for Austin, which is huge for them. And Charlie, you felt like this was a big game to gauge where Austin FC is at based off of how you perceive Nashville.
100%. This is a game where Nashville's a playoff, you know, caliber team, right? They're always going to be around the line. And Austin, you've had some great performances, but this is a match where Nashville play a very strong system, right? Defend first, look to counter, but also set pieces super dangerous. And now we're starting to see them figure out ways to hurt opponents in transition and in the attacking half when they gain possession. So I think for Austin, it's what are we? Where are we? You get Alex Ring back, huge piece. Diego Fagundes has looked good at times. Jared Stroud, I thought his final ball looks immensely better from last season, and he's getting chances now. And we've seen what Cecilio Dominguez has been able to do in the attacking third at times. So they need to still improve at that number nine spot. Like, you need a striker. And Josh Wolf, being a former striker, you think he's going to wait to pull the trigger till he finds the perfect partner to complement what Austin FC already has. So this is a great game to see where they are. Are they going to, you know, be a possession team and then be ultra aggressive, or they're going to invite Nashville into their half and then look to counter and play in the transition? So I'm excited to see this one to really get a gauge of how good Austin is.
I'll do Josh Wolf's work for him. Okay, I got a forward for you. Rumors coming out that Ake Loba, 23-year-old Ivorian striker at Monterrey, that he might be interested in coming to MLS. Maybe contract situation not going as well as expected at Monterrey. And this is a guy who, he scored 6 goals last season for Monterrey when he was on loan with Querétaro in Liga MX, scored 9 goals for them. You're talking about a young striker. You're talking about a striker who can push the back line or come in and help set up the attack. And you're talking about a guy who there is sell-on possibility, which it seems like Austin FC is conscious of in the way they've signed their DPs. They haven't gone for the big-name veterans like Miami's gone for. They want younger players in their prime who can run, be in this system, play in Austin, and then maybe sell on later. You're welcome. Los Verde.
There you go.
Here it is.
You heard it, Josh.
Just sign him up. It's not a big deal. Throw the millions over. Listen.
I think Wolfie's going to take you up on this now.
Yeah, I think so too. I'll start a GoFundMe. Whatever you need from me. Get this thing over the line. We've heard a lot of rumors for moves for Austin FC, but it's been a really great start to the season. On the flip side for Nashville, it's interesting. They've gone with the 2 forward setup in CJ and Dom the last 2 games as Hani Mukhtar comes back from injury. And Gary Smith said Yonder Cadiz is worse in a 2 forward setup. So he hasn't been in the starting lineup without Mukhtar in. So we don't know. Is Mukhtar back to starting this game? Does that bring Cadiz back in? Does CJ or Dom keep their spot in front of Mukhtar? There's a lot of question marks.
I think there's so much more dynamic with those two up top. We've seen they can both cause havoc for the back line because they can make runs in behind, right? You have 2 deep threats. You have 2 strong players with hold-up play. They make great runs. Or CJ has had a ton of success in this league because he's very smart at playing in between the center backs or in between the outside backs and the center backs, playing off the shoulder, his runs, and he's just really difficult to deal with. He's pretty good on the ball. So I think what Nashville has found out, okay, if we're going to play a certain way, we'll have much more space for Leal underneath and to get on the ball when these two guys are pulling people out of position. And so I think that's where Cadiz has struggled because you're not getting anything out of him in the buildup. You're not getting runs out of Cadiz. The only thing you can get out of Cadiz is finishing in the box. But if you're not going to, you know, give him a number of chances, you're really not going to get too much out of him. So they figured, okay, we're going to get more bang for our buck with Dom and CJ Sapong up top.
And don't forget Yonder Cadiz, he is on loan. It comes up this summer. So they have to decide if he's the guy, if they want to spend on him.
I don't think so.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it if he's not starting. The only thing with this situation is Hani Mukhtar then probably has to start on one of the wings, which might be more comfortable for him as well. Yeah. If he can do the defensive work and then you see him and Leal both coming in and interchanging, could be interesting for Nashville SC. You got to tip your cap to Gary Smith. Being creative with these injuries, starting to change up his group and trying some new things. So that one, 9 p.m. Eastern time, FS1 and Fox. Charlie, let's talk about our games of the week on ESPN+. We both are going Saturday night on this one. There's one ESPN+ game on Sunday. It is DC United versus Philly, which is going to be really fun, actually. But Charlie, you had Orlando TFC, 7 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. Give me the pitch.
Orlando TFC. Orlando, we saw what they were last year. And Carlos Oscar Pereira, I think, put it best when he said, this is a team who can challenge for titles now because of the way they play. They have a great understanding of each other. Nani looks like he's taken on the task of being a leader within this group. And I think that's empowered him to get more a better performance out of him. Jean Moutinho's getting back to full health. You know, he's on the pitch. We saw him last year, what a difference he made for them. Then if you have Kuan on one side, Antonio Carlos at the center back, Schlegel has now been playing over Janssen, although Janssen came in. So they need to get Perea getting going again.
Yeah.
They can get him. And then the number nine, Teshua Akindele, you know, he's good at filling in, right? But Daryl Dike was the difference maker for this team last year. You don't have that this year. So you need much more from your midfield. I think that the difference from last year to this year outside of Dike is Chris Mueller. They need to get him going. His confidence is low. And I think it started with the national team. He goes out, you know, has this good game in December last year. And then since then has kind of just had this downward trajectory. So building him back up, to have him have that confidence that he had last year, where it was fearless and just attacking and not afraid to take chances and keeping the ball close, making smart decisions. We haven't seen that from him this year. So I think that's the big difference for Orlando. And for Toronto, you got Jozy Altidore, you got Ayo Akinola, you got Soteldo, you still don't have Pozuelo. Getting them all on the pitch at the same time, but putting them in the right positions. They had Jozy as the number 10 last game. And Josie's not a 10. Josie can play balls that a number 10 can play, but he needs to be closer to goal. He needs to be the high man who can hold up the ball, engage the other attacker. So I still think they got to figure out the best way to move forward and get everyone on the pitch. But this is a good game to feel out where these two teams are going to end up.
And it's the game for Orlando, because this is the home stadium right now for TFC as well. So yeah, this is the fight for the soul of Exploria Stadium. A lot of excitement down in Dom Florida Dwyer. For this one. Yeah, the Dom Dwyer ball. Dwyer switching sides now, getting some minutes actually for TFC early on here. I thought Chris Mueller would be in the conversation to fill in for Jordan Morris, who was a starter for the national team out on the wing. He's probably over the course of this season so far taken himself out of that, but he can play himself back in if he starts to turn it on again. So it'll be interesting to see. My game is LAFC versus Colorado Rapids, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. And I am all about the Cole Bassett show. He is playing phenomenal as a 10. I sang about him last week on the Minnesota comeback, again in the blowout of the Houston Dynamo. He's doing it all at that number 10 spot. Kellen Acosta's back in midfield. Sam Vines is healthy, got the big goal early on, pinching off the wing against against Houston. And I think LAFC, obviously, they've struggled a bit over the course of this season to start. For Colorado, this is a big opportunity to say that we're better than a team like this, that we can compete at the top of the Western Conference. And it took them a few weeks to get going. Lalas Abubakar, it sounds like, already on the bench now, maybe gets back into the starting lineup. Either way, this team is growing, and this is the group I wanted to see. This is the team that I thought we'd see from the Rapids this year. It was a tough start to the year with injuries, and now they're starting to get into form. For LAFC, that athletic piece that I talked about, some big news coming from there as well. The report is that Almeida has a buy option on Brian Rodriguez that will automatically trigger if they get promoted to La Liga. They are currently in third place, which means they would go into a playoff to get promoted. Speaking of playoffs, Daryl Dike losing 1-0 right now, so he might be back in Orlando pretty soon. And Brian Rodriguez not with the team. Almeida sent him back to Uruguay because he got in a fight with a teammate, said he didn't want to be there anymore. But apparently the trigger is permanent. So if they win, you get the big fee off for LAFC. You open up a DP spot. This is a bizarre story from every angle. May have a quote-unquote happy ending, or at least the positive one for LAFC. They might get out of it. If not, and they don't get promoted, they got to figure out what to do with Brian Rodriguez, because they spent a lot of money on him. He's still in the Uruguay team for Copa America. There's still a ton of talent there. It just doesn't seem to be working out for him right now. Let's talk about a few other games. New England versus New York Red Bulls this weekend as well. Charlie, you'll be on the call, I assume?
Yes. Yes, I will. I can't wait for this, because the Revs seem like they're finally found their rhythm and their form. And it's obviously centered around Carlos Heel and what he's been able to do for this team. Arguably the MVP of the league right now, you know, Rui Diaz is up there. But what I think from this team is they're going to go after Red Bulls, because you lose Aaron Long, and my heart goes out to Aaron Long. I know it's it's going to be a very difficult a recovery that probably, you know, beats you up mentally, right? Because you got a World Cup that you're thinking about in the future. You know, you had all these European teams after you. That didn't work out. And you're thinking, I'm going to play myself into a World Cup, play myself into maybe a potential long-term new contract with Red Bulls or a move to Europe. And then you have this Achilles injury. It's a lot to handle. So he's got to stay positive. I know he'll bounce back. But for the Revs, this is an opportunity to really get after the Red Bulls without, you know, Aaron Long. They struggle defensively. They don't have the outside backs. They get forward, but they get exposed. So this is a game made for the Revs.
So for the Red Bulls, let's talk long term for the season, not just this Revs game. How do they fill in for a loss like Aaron Long? How do they continue on this season? Who this was the one defender on that back line that you believed in coming into this season?
You have to move Amro Tarek to the middle. Right. And he's playing with Nealis. And then you play, maybe it's Yearwood, or he got a red card, so you can't play Yearwood. I don't know.
Not a lot of answers. Left. Yeah.
There's not. I mean, you bring up a young kid from.
Yeah. They have Andres Reyes. Yeah. They have Andres Reyes, who they signed, who was on at Inter Miami last year, who's played a little bit with Red Bulls too. Manny Egbo as well has played center back with Red Bulls too. They might have to go three at the back again. And I know it worked so poorly last time, but if you don't have two center backs now that you can believe in, and Aaron Long was a big part of the ability to play two at the back, you may not have much of a choice. One of the rumors out there as well from The Athletic is Ventura Alvarado, 28-year-old former U.S. national team player, hasn't gotten a call up in a little while, but has played in Liga MX the last 6-7 years, Club America, Necaxa, and then last year Atletico San Luis. Sounds like they agreed to terminate his contract. It's a 28-year-old in your prime center back who could be available. That might be at least the short-term answer for New York Red Bulls here, as they're kind of going to be grasping at straws. This is a massive injury. This is, I think, equal to Joseph getting hurt for Atlanta, Vela getting hurt for LAFC, where I think he was the most important player on this team and maybe the best player on this team. And now Red Bulls are, it's going to be tough to get over this one and continue on for the rest of this season. Let's hit our fantasy plays for this weekend, and mine is from this game, actually. DeJuan Jones, you mentioned it. Red Bulls have been questionable defensively. They've been questionable at right back specifically. And even if Kyle Duncan plays well, or whoever it is, or Tom Edwards maybe, they still leave openings. And so I have DeJuan Jones getting forward. I think this is a Revs team that could post a shutout. He could get an assist or a goal. This is a huge opportunity to go in and get a defender and maybe get some big points off him. So my guy's DeJuan Jones. Charlie, you're going south a little.
You know where I'm going. I always look, who's playing Cincinnati? Who is playing Cincinnati? Oh, okay. Montreal's playing Cincinnati. And Montreal has looked surprisingly good at times this year. Without Thierry Henry, I thought, oh, this is going to be an abysmal season. That is not the case. So I'm going with Bjorn Johnson. That's who I'm going
with. The guy, our legend.
The striker, any striker who's playing against Cincinnati that can score goals and is going to get opportunities, that's who I'm going with. Laipalainen, Zachary Brogiard, those players can create for Johnson. I feel like he's going to have a big game.
Listen, I'm here for it.
Yeah, me too.
He's an ETR fan. He's a legend. He's also been off to a great start in his early time getting starts with Montreal. So hopefully it keeps going for Bjorn Johnson for FC Cincinnati. We hope it gets better for you guys. I think it will, but a lot of question marks. They start the weekend off. So that's the first game, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday. Loaded Saturday, a ton of games, those two national TV games. Obviously, Galaxy Timbers, we talked about the NFTs. It's on ABC. It's the Galaxy. Chicharito scoring again. It's the Timbers. Eric Williamson doing his thing, all the pomp and circumstance, and then the two national TV games starting at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, and then you've got that Philly DC game in the middle. Let's talk DC for a second. We got an email here. Christian Alfaro, a native of Silver Spring, Maryland. Shout out to Silver Spring. Really good pupusas up in that area. Big fan of the show. Finally got around to mailing in. Having attended the past two DC games, I can confidently say this has been the most inspiring I've seen the team play in a while. Perez is a revelation working up front with Flores, and seeing Areola come back in to combine in the final third look fantastic. He said last night, this game earlier in the week, they were running a bit of a false nine. So who amongst the players that we have, Ola Kamara, Eric Sorga, and Roberta, is probably the best to fit the comp to complement the others? Or do they need a different kind of striker to finally start putting some chances away?
Great question. Shout out to DC United, the fans, supporters.
Charlie's about to trash his old club, and he knows he's got to give the love early.
Stop trying to read me. I think with this team and how they play, like you said, it's beautiful soccer, and they feel like there's combinations and ideas. Well, you don't have the striker. Unfortunately, you don't have the striker that you need to take this team to the next level. Ola Kamara is solely a striker that I think thrives on service and service into the box. That is all you're going to get out of Ola Kamara. And I think we've seen that for, what, the past 3 years now. There's not much production from him. If you're not just whipping balls in left and right for him and you play a style for him like the Columbus Crew had, the way Greg Berhalter set up his team, whoever was playing striker was going to get chances and was going to get goals.
Yeah.
That is not the case with DC United. So he's not the answer. We've already seen Sorga is not the answer.
Roberta is the other one that he put in there, who's the Curaçao center forward. He's the only one that was signed post Hernan Losada, or at least Hernan Losada in the conversation. So he's the one you would hope would sort of fit with all of this.
Yeah. Guess that we haven't seen enough of him to know if he can play up to that level. But so far, what I've seen, no. So I do like Areola. I like, you know, Junior Moreno, Moses Nyman. I think Edison Flores at times has looked like himself. I think for the most part, especially last year, you just thought, how do you spend so much money on a player and not play any type of style that would best suit him if you're going to spend money on a player like that? Yeah. So this is a better looking team when you can play three in the back. You have more chances to get wide with Mora and Areola getting up and down the flanks to pull out players to create more space underneath. So yeah, it's exciting for DC because it's been so poor. So it's a huge step in the right direction, but still a long way to go.
Good to see Areola at least come back from that injury, come back from, you know, what must have been frustrating experience in England and hit the ground running and look positive. So for DC, it's been more positive than it has been for the last year. It needs to get a lot better, but I'm glad that Christian's having fun and enjoying the games again. They will host Philadelphia this weekend, so another chance to get out to Audi Field if you're in the area. We got another starter question here. Christian Simon Brown emailed us. He worded his question differently than I would. So it basically comes down to Alex Bono or Quinton Westberg.
Quinton Westberg, without a doubt. And it's just because he makes smarter decisions in goal. When to come out positionally, tactically, not giving up loose rebounds or flailing at the ball. You just feel much more secure with Quinton Westberg in the goal than Alex Bono. So for me, just based on that, not giving up rebounds, being in the right position, just that the calmness, you know what you're going to get from Quinton Westberg every time, the delivery. I think his distribution's fantastic. You know, he's always had that little sidewinder kick ever since we were like 17. I was like, man, this goalie, he's got it. And he's a great person. So I think Quinton Westberg is the best keeper you have if you're Toronto FC.
So can I just say, I understand he's 35. I understand the idea from TFC saying, let's try Bono. He's the future.
Buffon will look at you and say,
I know.
What?
Goalkeeper is a different position. Yes. See, Amelia's pushing those numbers. Nick Raimondo played till a deep number. It feels like Stefan Fry probably will as well. But still, you can understand the idea with a new coach saying, let's give Bono the opportunity. Let's see if he's the guy. Right now, he's making mistakes that lose you points in MLS.
Left and right.
Yeah, and that's not acceptable.
It always has.
And it's not acceptable when you have Quinton Westberg on the bench and you're a win-now team. That's the other piece of this. You bring in Soteldo. Josie, obviously, towards the end of his career, Michael Bradley as well, Omar, Mavinga. There is some youth in this team, but it is win now set up for Toronto FC, and Quinton Westberg gives you the best chance to win now. Do you want one more, or should we close out?
One more. Give me one more.
Okay. Brian Schmetzer time here. We get an email from Moeta. And so first he says, Brian Schmetzer gives me low-key Harrison Ford vibes on his press conferences, the way he just keeps coming back to it's like a distant echo and the way he's pondering. So I like that. I think Brian Schmetzer would appreciate that as well. He then asks this, am I crazy or is this a good case of man management by Garth Lagerwey? By slow walking contract talks last year, did he push Schmetzer to prove his worth and get him to a new level maybe? Or is this a case of I'm reading into it too much? Remember, Schmetzer still didn't have a contract, I think, when they went to MLS Cup last year. Then gets his contract, his assistants get on board as well. And this is probably the best job he's done so far, even with all the trophies he's won in the past.
I have to agree. I have to agree. The system change, getting the most out of his squad, the depth of his squad. And let's not forget, he has one hell of a staff.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I think they've just done a terrific job to pick up where they left off. They lose, you know, the MLS Cup final. It's devastating. But they just... it's like they powered through. They're like, we're not letting this stop us. Let's keep going. This train isn't stopping. And it's been impressive. I'm curious to see if there is going to be a drop-off. You know, that midsummer drop-off where you see teams kind of like maybe the teams that started strong, they start to, you know, have that drop-off and then it's hard for them to kind of rediscover where they were early on in the year. Or is this a team that's just, oh, we got Nico Ladero back. It took him a month to get going and now we're just, you know, all the way till the playoffs, we're just going to keep this going, foot on the gas. So I'm interested to see, you know, how much does he push this team and how many times is he going to rotate guys? That's the challenge.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You mentioned that staff. Jimmy Traore, who I think won a Champions League, legend. Gonzalo Pineda, Mexican legend, Chivas legend, also won a Supporter Shield in MLS. Preki as well, and then Tom Dutra, your goalkeeper coach.
What a crew.
So a loaded staff, and the reports that we got were that was a large part of the delay on Brian Schmetzer's contract, was he was trying to secure contracts for all of them up front to make sure they got what they deserved, and they've been all incredible, as you said, and obviously this team has been as well. Can Atlanta United slow it? We shall find out this weekend. And with that, that is our extra time for today, driven by Continental Tire. It has been a lot of fun, Charlie. Next week, Andrew Wiebe will be back. I think Doyle's going on vacation. Who knows what's going on? I'm going to take a couple days this weekend and pop up to Portland, Maine, get some New England fresh vibes. You know, get that smell off the coast. Maybe drink a
get
beverage.
Some lobster, kid. Get exactly. Some lobster, kid.
Definitely going to watch some MLS while I'm up there as well. Very excited. We'll be back on Monday. And we've got a special Club and Country coming out next Wednesday. That's your Nations League preview. We're going to get you prepped. We're going to get you ready for this number one USMNT squad. Charlie Davies is going to break it all down for you. And with that, have a great day, everyone.